Welcome to SEC Sports Roundtable, episode 132, University of South Carolina Gamecocks football preview, recorded Sunday, August 24th, 2014. Taking notes from our SC guy, who happens to be in Japan, Shane Bailey, Blair Smiley, and Britton Burton look at the South Carolina Gamecocks. How does their defense look without Clowney? Can Dylan Thompson step in and fill Connor Shaw's shoes? Do they have the size to compete with the Dogs? All this and more on tonight's SEC SRT. Welcome to SEC Sports Roundtable. This is your host, Shane Bailey, back to finish up with a long stretch of East previews. We're going to start with South Carolina this afternoon. Tomorrow we're going to do Tennessee. Then going to wrap things up with the lead dog in the East, the University of Kentucky Wildcats, because it's almost basketball season. It's our basketball season preview. We're going to start it early. Then we'll finish up with the Wildcats. So we are SEC Sports Roundtable. We do this from a fan's perspective. We all have allegiances to teams. Tonight's podcast, our Mississippi State guy is in, but he's filling in for the South Carolina Gamecock that we like to have on our show tonight. So he's in Japan, not able to be with us, but he sent a nice lengthy show notes for things for us to cover. So we've got some things to cover on the South Carolina Gamecock. So we do this once a week. When the season gets started, we're going to take a look at the week that happened, what we thought went well, what didn't go well, what we have liked to have seen differently, and then take a look at the week that's coming up and what we expect. And we're going to do that on a weekly basis, and you can find this about anywhere that you can just listen or watch a podcast or an audio, TV, whatever. We're on YouTube, we're on Twitter, we're on Facebook, we're on Stitcher Radio, we're on, did I say iTunes? We are anywhere. Not yet. Anywhere you can get an RSS feed, just type in SEC SRT. Those six letters will let you find it any way you want to get the content that you, the way you want to hear it and see it. So we do this via Google Hangouts every week. Today, joining me, we've got Blair Smiley. Welcome back, Blair. It's been a couple episodes.
Good to be back, Shane.
I noticed that you don't have an egg or a Mississippi State Bulldog or anything like that in your screen today, so you're staying neutral for the South Carolina side.
That's right.
Back to
I'm just lazy. I didn't want to go find it and attach it. Sorry.
Hey, it's all right. And you have no avatar either, so it's just a little person.
Yeah.
You need to fix that.
I know.
And then Britton Burton joining us. Me and Britton, we're doing double duty today, so we can get these out to you. So, Britton, thanks for doing daddy duty and podcasting all at the same time. We appreciate you hanging in there.
Yeah, happy to be here. I may have to jump in and out a little bit as I feed the child, but I'll be on talking football as much as I can.
We appreciate you being here. So, like I said, we are doing the South Carolina Gamecocks. If you look at the East and how that's going to break down, some think they're the leader in the East. Others think they're right there at the top. One, two, or three, depending on if you want to believe the Florida hype. I don't think anybody here necessarily is going to buy that hype that's out there. We talked a little bit about that on our Alabama. Yeah, we can talk about that for a second. Where is all this coming from? I know they were injured. I know they were hurt. But really, are they going to be a contender for the East?
I don't know. I mean, I'm pretty sure you've already done your Florida preview, but I don't know, man. I just don't see how one guy in Kurt Roper is going to make that much difference. And, you know, he's pretty much a Cutcliffe guy. And so unless he's bringing Cutcliffe with him to actually call the plays, I'll be interested to actually see. So who knows? We'll see. They got to have a lot of things hit to be good, I think. And so, but who knows? It's why they play the game, Shane.
It is, but, you know, you're just the more as the closer we get to the season starting, the more hype you're hearing from about the Florida Gators, and I'm having trouble buying into it because we did our Florida podcast, and I think I might have been having them lucky to go to a bowl game, and they're they're going to struggle this year, in my opinion. And so, I don't know. Good for them to think that. And, you know, that's why we have these conversations and why we debate it, because we all have different opinions. The good news is, after the season's over, one of us is right and one of us is wrong. And it's proven one way or the other. So we'll see what kind of happens and plays out. But, you know, tonight we're going to talk a little about South Carolina. Blair, just kick us off and tell us a little bit about what we need to expect from South Carolina this year.
Well, I think with South Carolina, the first thing you need to start with is the head ball coach, the old head ball coach. You know, you're talking about Steve Spurrier going into his 10th year. You know, how many of us would have thought a decade ago when he took the job at South Carolina, number one, that he'd be there for 10 years, but that he would probably end up having more wins at South Carolina than he would at Florida. I mean, that's where it's going to be. I mean, the guy's been rejuvenated. I think I saw a statistic where South Carolina had one 10-win season before Steve Spurrier in his whole career, and he's had three back-to-back-to-back 11-win seasons. So pretty impressive. You know, and to kind of give you an idea, I mean, I follow this stuff because Mississippi State's been about as terrible in football as you could possibly have over 100 years, and South Carolina was pretty bad at football for a long period of time, so bad that Spurrier actually became the winningest coach in about his seventh year. So, I mean, it just kind of lets you know, that's where I think everything starts and ends. And, you know, and what I'm hating is that the day when that dude walks away, because when that guy walks away, really kind of the old ball coach that will say what's on his mind, that doesn't mind basically telling you like it is, being honest with the media, it's gone, because he's really kind of the dying breed. And so I think everything begins and ends with Spurrier. You know, I just think he's a guy that's just, you know, just a winner and is just so demanding. But when I look at South Carolina, there's a couple things I take a look at. I took offensively. I mean, Shane, I think they're going to have probably the best O-line running back combo in the country. They got three starters on the offensive line that will play in the NFL. Robinson and Kane, I believe, are the two seniors. And then you have Art Shell's son, who's a junior that's just an absolute stud. You know, I think we were actually talking just before we got on here, Mike Matulis, which was a guy that has been really, really good when he's been healthy. Was out all of last year. Looks like he got dinged up a little bit. Probably going to miss some time here, but should be back in late in the middle part of the year. But I think offensively, that's where you're going to start. They're going to have a really, really deep offensive line, probably the best they've had under Spurrier. And then with Mike Davis, I mean, you got to remember, they got Brandon Lyles, Sean Carson, and then, you know, the information I've gotten is that David Williams is a fourth running back that could almost end up being the number two back behind Mike Davis. He's that good. So I think they're going to be a running football team. And then you throw in Dylan Thompson. Dylan Thompson is kind of the unknown. Everybody has seen him play. He's 5-0, but he's played in some really, really, really big games for him. You know, I mean, I think in 2012, I think he actually played at Clemson and the Michigan game, won both of those. He also played, I think, East Carolina as well to start out the year. But and then, of course, he played UCF and Missouri last year to bring two victories. And then, you know, he stepped in and hit that, you know, stepped in, I believe, in the bowl game last year and hit that last-second touchdown, if I'm not mistaken. So, you know, who knows what he's going to be, but, you know, if you're looking at this, Shane, don't you think that he's going to be probably the closest thing that Spurrier's had to what he really wants, a kind of a down-the-field type of guy that really Connor Shaw wasn't. Connor Shaw had that innate ability to run with the football, was kind of a tough, gritty guy that was just a winner, but he didn't really do it a lot of the ways that Spurrier actually did it, which was kind of throwing the football down the field. And so I'll be interested to kind of see from that. But from the offensive standpoint, I think that's what I see.
We talked about that on the Alabama podcast because I was asking Britton, would Saban be able to do what Spurrier did last year? because you look at Connor Shaw, and that was not the typical quarterback that Spurrier likes in his system. He changed the way he coached and let Connor Shaw do what he needed to do to succeed and be successful and win ball games. And that's the most you've ever seen Spurrier adapt and change, I think, in all of his coaching. And he let Connor Shaw do what he would excel at. I said at the beginning of that pod, or when we were talking about this, is that when you look at Dylan Thompson and Connor Shaw, if you remember going into last season, they were talking about, or Spurrier was saying they were going to be dual quarterbacks. And Connor Shaw won that game, or won that rather handily in the first game. You know, and you never really saw that quarterback competition or that split role after that. I have a question afterwards that, you know, what makes you think that Dylan Thompson is so much better now when he didn't win the starting position a year ago? That's my first question. The other question is, I'll pose to you. Do you think Saban can do the same thing Spurrier did last year with the Shaw-Thompson competition and the way he changed this year with Sims and Coker? Because if Sims is the quarterback, he's going to be more similar to the way Connor Shaw runs an offense. If Coker's your guy, it's going to be more like Dylan Thompson. So he's got the same scenario this year that Spurrier had last year. And I was curious what you think. Do you think Saban's able to change it if Sims is his guy? And then, well,
I don't think he really has a choice. You know, that's kind of the thing. I mean, Spurrier, you know, what a lot of people forget is even when Spurrier was at Florida, he threw the football around, you know, when you had Werfel and all those guys and Shane Matthews. But if you really watch, I mean, he had Fred what's his name? Oh, what was Fred? His son's playing for Florida right now, just drawing a blank. Played in the NFL for the Jaguars forever.
Davis?
Taylor.
Thank you. Fred Taylor. You know, what Spurrier would do is he would literally throw the football 40 times in the first half, get into the third quarter, and then he would run the ever-living mess out of you and just wear you down. In South Carolina, you know, Spurrier has never been afraid to run the football, and I think that's kind of the strength of things. But I think he likes to stretch the field. And in Alabama, I don't think you really have a choice. If Coker, if Coker can't win the job, you always wonder. Hey, Jimbo Fisher says, hey, this guy's got the greatest arm, or whatever. It was a neck to neck Jameis Winston, or whatever. Well, what the heck happens with Jameis Winston whenever he gets hurt, or if he does get hurt? I mean, is this kid good enough just to let him transfer? Not try to talk him into staying. So, I mean, who knows? I mean, from the Saban standpoint, I don't think he really has a choice. I think he'll adjust. Those guys are too good to not adjust. But I think for Dylan Thompson's standpoint is, when you look at Connor Shaw, I think he was just a better football player, and I think a better gamer than Dylan Thompson. And maybe this time off where he's got the ability to say, hey, this is my team. I'm going to take on the leadership role. We really haven't talked about wide receivers, but, they're going to be good at wide receiver. They're not going to be, they don't have a bunch of Alshon Jeffries or any of those guys just kind of hanging out there. But, they've got some good guys. They've got Bird. And, I think they've got there's a couple of them in there that I always can't remember, Roland, Cooper. So they're going to be good. So I'm interested to see. But they're going to lean on the running game. But I think if you got guys like Mike Davis, Mike Davis is an all-SEC. He is just as good, I think, as any of the Georgia running backs. I mean, that's hard to say, but I think he's a 1,200 to 1,400 yard rusher if he's actually able to stay healthy easily. And could even get, above the 1,500 yard range. But I think, I think Spurrier's a lot more disciplined in his play calling. I think he's a little less edgy than he was maybe 15 years ago. And so I think he's learned to kind of stay with it. And play it a little bit different than he did, with a Werfel and a Shane Matthews, where he could throw it 55 times, and put up 60 points. So I'm interested to see. I mean, when you talk about the East, Shane, when we were talking about earlier, I mean, Georgia's got questions. South Carolina's got some questions. Florida's got, I think, lots of questions. Missouri got questions. Everybody has questions because it all stems from the quarterback position on down, you know, and some pretty impactful players off off the field last year. So, yeah, I think South Carolina's biggest thing is I think they're going to be good offensively. But I think where we're going to learn where they are is on the defensive side of things, you know, from that standpoint. And everything focused on, you know, Jadeveon Clowney. So that's where everything is focused on and where it was focused last year. One of the statistics I did see about South Carolina is they were the second youngest team in all of the country last year, which you wouldn't have really thought. So a bunch of young talent, which is really scary from the standpoint of South Carolina because they've just gone to three 11-win seasons in a row, and last year they were the youngest team in the country. So it's pretty impressive.
Britton, you got anything you want to add, throw in there?
No, I think that they're going to be very much a contender for the East. The only thing that I trust more about Georgia winning the East than South Carolina is just a little bit more experience coming back. I think that Dylan Thompson is going to do the job that Spurrier needs to be done at quarterback, and they're going to be good offensively, but I'm a little worried about them defensively. Not that they'll be bad. They're just replacing a lot. And anytime you lose a guy like Clowney and Kelsey Quarles, who is another really good defensive player, defensive lineman who didn't get as much pub, you know, it's hard to replace guys like that.
Yeah. So. Well, I mean, Shane, let's just talk about their defense right quick because we've kind of brought that up. Defensively, you know, you obviously lose Clowney. So from a defensive end standpoint, and we talked about this a little bit earlier, defensive end standpoint, they are thin. And of course, a lot of that highlight goes to Clowney and how he played last year and all that stuff. You do lose Quarles as a defensive tackle, but they do have some depth inside, you know, with the Dixon and Surratt, which will start, and they've got several guys, and you know, they beat out a couple of guys. They beat out a kid beat Alabama out for a kid this past year. I think from a JUCO standpoint, Lehman. So they're going to have some guys in the middle. And what we talked about earlier, you know, the reports out of South Carolina are is that they've got a tremendous depth at linebacker. If you could think about Spurrier's career at South Carolina, always had secondary cornerbacks, always had defensive linemen, but he never had any linebackers. And now they've actually done a good job of accumulating linebackers, and it looks like they're going to use a partial 3-4 system in some situations, mostly passing downs, just because of that inexperience and lack of depth on the defensive end. So it looks like they are going to try to get their best players and really be more of a scheming defense than maybe they have been in the past. And they've always run that kind of quirky thing. You know, it's kind of what you know, they started out there from a defensive standpoint where they had the spur linebacker, which was basically a fifth, kind of a fifth defensive back slash hybrid linebacker. So they got some of those guys. I think where you're really going to see the issues is that lack of depth on the defensive end. And I think secondary, I think they've got some safeties, but their cornerbacks, I mean, they're going to be thin there. I think they're young. So I think they've got a lot of talent, but I don't know. We haven't seen them play. There's nothing. There's not a name there that resonates. And so I think those are going to be the two areas that you're going to be looking at from a defensive standpoint to see, hey, are they going to be able to make that move?
A couple of things I see on the defensive line. They're also light. Not only are they there's not a lot of experience. They're little.
Yeah.
And so that's the last thing you'll see is that defense get blown up on the line. And that right there could be the reason why the linebackers are going to be so important in this scheme with the 3-4 switching to it. And we've talked before on podcasts how hard this is going to be for a program to just adapt on the fly, Vanderbilt switching to a 3-4. Can they do that? Can they do that regularly and with effectiveness? And that's going to be difficult to do. You're looking at the quarters.
I think it's easier today than it was a decade ago because I think, you know, you hear it all the time, this whole hybrid, you know, schemes where they show a lot of three fronts, but it may actually be a four front. Like they're kind of going in and out of this to show different looks, and blitz schemes and that type of stuff. So, but yeah, it's definitely a change from what you're actually doing. I do. And to talk about how light they are, I think there's a, you know, this Darius English who will probably start. The kid's like 6'6 and like 250. So he's a tall, lanky, you know, basically guy. So he's not one of your 270, 275 DNs that can, you know, rush off the edge. So it's definitely going to be the work in progress there from that standpoint, on the cornerbacks and defensive end.
Well, the thing that makes me nervous, not so much as about switching to the 3-4, as that they're going to switch back and forth between the 3-4 and kind of their base, which is, I guess, more of a 4-2-5. Yeah. That makes me a little bit nervous. I mean, I certainly understand wanting to get your best talent on the field, and I wonder if when they say that, if they just mean that they're plugging, you know, bigger outside linebackers into their traditional defensive end spots, or if they're really going to switch back and forth between 3-4 and 4-3, because we see NFL defenses who try to run kind of a hybrid approach where it takes a couple of seasons for them to get it down, and they're able to practice full-time, where in college you're, you know, only supposed to be practicing 20 hours a week. So, you know, I don't know enough about the team to know that that's definitely going to be a problem, but that makes me a little bit nervous as an outsider who just hears that and kind of thinks about the potential implications.
Yeah, and I mean, and also the other thing that you probably need to factor in too is how many times has this defense of all these defensive players heard since the end of the season how terrible they're going to be without Clowney and Quarles? I mean, that's all that's been talked about is Clowney, and, you know, basically how you're not going to be any good. So I'm pretty sure they're going to have a little bit of a chip on their shoulder from that standpoint, and, you know, from that end. And really, I mean, outside of they're going to play Texas A&M at the very beginning, but, you know, they got Georgia at, what, the third game, like they normally do. I mean, outside of that, you know, I mean, that's really their two toughest tests in, like, the first eight games. So they're going to have the ability to, you know, to be able to play some, you know, at Vanderbilt, at Kentucky, or their road games early. So they're going to have the ability to kind of get through this and maybe – dwell before they kind of get later in the season where they get some of their tougher competition.
What has Mark been saying about the completion, the accuracy of Dylan? I mean, if you look at what he did, he was, you know, he had good stats as far as win-loss, but, I mean, he was barely completing a little over 50% of his passes.
I think that's one of the things that's kind of, you know, I don't really get all too worked up about that. The only reason I say that is because, like, Dak Prescott, that's one of the things people talk about. He had, like, 57% completion percentage. Well, when you're popping into a game and you're doing stuff, you know, and you're really kind of learning, or you've been thrown in. Like, for him, I mean, he's been thrown in five games where he's actually started, but he's played some other games. Sometimes when you're coming in, you may be coming in a scenario where, you know, I just don't look at the accuracy as that big of a deal. I think once you actually know, hey, I've got the job, I'm going to be coming in, this is my team for 12 games, I think you'll see some heightened awareness, and I think play calling may be a little bit more friendly from that standpoint of what his strengths and weaknesses are. But I also think that he's a guy that throws it down the field. So whenever Spurrier actually sees a guy that can throw it down the field, you know, he's definitely going to be calling some plays. So that's why I think, you know, from that end, you may give up a little bit of completion percentage, but you may actually get, you know, 248-yard touchdowns that you probably wouldn't have gotten previous. So
more that home run hitter type of mentality.
Yeah, exactly. But, I mean, that is a concern, but it's nothing I would read into because he's a guy that really hasn't been full-time. So he's been kind of doing spot duty. And sometimes, you know, it might take you a little bit of a rhythm to kind of get going from that standpoint. That's just my thought.
What other things has Mark got out there that we need to make sure we know or understand about this Gamecock program this year?
Really, I think, you know, really the highlight was, you know, from his standpoint was, you know, they've got a bunch of young talent because they are so young. 2015 and 2016, they're going to be probably really good, especially defensively. Yeah, I think for him, they have questions, but they don't have as many questions as maybe all the other teams have. So they have just as many questions or less than the other teams in the East. You know, if you look at, I mean, I don't know if y'all would throw this out, but I mean, you know, Mason at Georgia, if I had to choose today, I would go with Dylan Thompson over him because I've actually seen Dylan Thompson play. You know, Mason's played a couple of games here towards the end of last year, but, you know, so I think when you're talking about the East, you're talking about Georgia and South Carolina, you know, and I think they've all got some questions. So I think from that standpoint, that's really it. They're young, so you don't know how that's going to work out. You got some really talented kids that, you know, they say that they're going to hit on the cornerback side. They've got a true freshman, I think, that started from practice one at one of the cornerback spots. You know, but we'll see how it actually turns out. But I think that's it. I think it's Spurrier. You know, what did Spurrier say? It's kind of shut up time, and, you know, it's the talking season's over with. Now you got to do something about it. So, you know, it's you have the old ball coach, man. He's part of the aura that is what, you know, he's kind of done there. So, you know, can they get to 11 wins again for a fourth time? We'll see.
I don't think they have as many questions as Georgia. I mean, I think Georgia doesn't have as many questions as South Carolina does. Mason, yes, there's a question mark there. But, you know, you look at the way this has gone and the way we've talked about this number of times, in similar ways that Dylan Thompson knows this system, Hudson Mason knows Georgia's system. I mean, he's ran this system for 5 years. So he knows this like the back of his hand. He got some game time experience last year, so he was thrown to the fire and showed himself to have some poise and to hold himself together. Now, what does that equate to on a 12-game season where he is the guy and the pressure week to week to week, as opposed to there's no pressure coming in, filling in for the Murray, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whew. Aaron Murray.
Too many quarterbacks in my head. Filling in for Murray last year, it makes it, you know, there's that pressure. That's the only unknown to me about the Georgia program this year. But you're going to have so many things that complement that going forward to help that program. So,
I think this is the way I would look at Georgia and South Carolina. I think you basically say the offensive line and running backs are pretty much a wash. You know, Georgia, you know, Todd Gurley maybe has a little bit higher end, but Mike Davis is just as good as any running back in the league. So I think you're kind of running a wash there. I like Dylan Thompson more than I like Hudson Mason just because I've actually seen him more. And I feel a little bit more confident in Spurrier's play calling from that standpoint. When you go over to the defensive side of the ball, they got questions on both sides of the ball, on both defenses. And that's really where it is. Georgia has a new defensive coordinator who is going to make them better automatically because the whole, you know, crazy, fiery head Grantham or whatever his name was, you know, just, well, that was just a bad experience. So I think the Pruitt's going to make them, I think they're going to make them a better team, but there is a transition there.
There is, but I think Pruitt brings a level of toughness that the Georgia defense was lacking. They weren't lacking talent. They're not lacking experience. They were lacking toughness, and I think that's what he brings that Grantham did not have. And so it doesn't take long to bring toughness in if you're able to instill that in the players, and all of a sudden you've got a totally different defense than you did last year on the field.
Yeah, and Georgia has the thing that worries me about Georgia is they're still going to have the guys out. They still are having the off-field issues that they seem to always have. So that early game against South Carolina, it's in South Carolina. So it's just, you know, Ward for South Carolina has been there. You know, he got promoted up to defensive coordinator. So they know who that guy is. They're probably going to tweak their system a little bit, but I don't think it's going to be too much out of the ordinary. But I mean, it's one of those things where you're talking about, hey, this team is a 9.5 out of 10, and this other one's a 9.3 out of 10. I mean, they're right. I mean, they're the two in the East, I think, that are right neck and neck, and they both got questions, and that's what makes a third week game that could decide the East so critical, is that it's going to be so early in the season.
Well, I mean, you look at Georgia's schedule, and when we did this on the podcast, I mean, they start off with a pretty decent test with Clemson, but Clemson's not the same program it was last year or the year before. And then they get a week off; they get a bye right after that to get prepared for South Carolina.
Nice.
Yeah, so that really bodes well for them coming into South Carolina. That's only their second game. I say that it could also be the other way around. They might also want a cupcake sandwich in between there to work out some things and instill some new wrinkles or something like that.
You know, don't you think it would be hard, though? I don't know, man. I mean, if I just spent 8 months waiting up for football season, and I've done this 2-a-days, and I play one game, I'd hate to have the next week off. You know, I'd like to kind of have a consistency. That's just me personally. Yeah, I like having that third, you know, after the third game or the fourth game, having a bye, you know, gives you 4 weeks to kind of really figure out what your team is. But, man, after week one, it's kind of like you're restarting. Yeah.
I can speak. Alabama had that last year. They had the opener against Virginia Tech and a bye, and then Texas A&M. And just as a fan, you're like, you're going nuts because football's finally back. You're ready to watch your team, and the second week you're still kind of on that high of football being back, and your team doesn't have a game. So it's got to be magnified by 20 players and coaches if it's that bad for fans.
Yeah, but, you know, sometimes the thing that we fans get wrapped up in, the players don't. And so, you know, now all of a sudden you do have a focus. It's not like you get a week off and then you get Troy. I mean, you get a week off and you're going to South Carolina. So you have – That's one of your circled games in your calendar that you have to come away with a win if you're going to compete for the SEC title. So you've got something to focus your energy on and keep you laser focused and on that target that you wouldn't have as a fan. You know, we don't have those things. We don't have the game room where we get to go see game film and work out and practice plays to have wrinkles put in place to play South Carolina. We don't have that. We get to play armchair for 2 weeks.
Dude, we got SEC Network, man. We have everything that they have. And we get film.
You mean SEC SRT is not good enough for you?
Man, I'm telling you what, dude, on Wednesday night, man, we get like film study with the coach. It's going to be awesome.
No, I'm
just kidding.
We talked about
You're
this.
You're right.
We talked about this last week, though. I mean, that's the first channel my TV goes to.
Yes.
It's pretty it's been a I'd love to see. I haven't seen any ratings. Have you seen any ratings for that?
I haven't.
I'd like to see what they've done in the South and then everywhere else, cuz you know in the South it's got to be huge numbers. So,
yeah, the kicker's going to be Saturday when they do the SEC Nation, same time as College Game Day.
I'm ready for it. Well, let's kind of look. We hinted about this schedule for South Carolina. You know, they start off with that Thursday game. That's the first game, right?
Yeah, yeah. You know, I just saw that.
5 o'clock.
Yeah, it's going to start at 5 o'clock.
Got to leave work early, man.
Absolutely. You got to find a bar.
Well, you texted me about tickets to the Titans game, and I never heard back from you because you were saying we could catch this at halftime, and so I didn't know.
Well, that's what I thought, and then I was like, what the heck? So what we could do is we could actually go early, watch till 7 o'clock, and walk over and watch the Titans for a half, and then I guess go watch Ole Miss and Boise. Do they play that night?
Yeah, that's at 7 o'clock.
And so Vandy, yeah. In Vandy Temple?
Yeah, that plays at 8 o'clock. Who wants to work? Yeah.
But anyway, Texas A&M kicking things
loss.
Off. What?
Nah, they're winning that one. Sorry.
I thought you did. You say loss at first?
Yeah, because I was thinking Texas A&M.
Texas A&M's going to lose.
Yes.
Yeah. Britton?
Yeah, I agree. I think this is the first step down a long season for Texas A&M where they're in danger of missing a bowl, but 6 or 7 wins is their cap, and this is the first loss, obviously, because it's the first game.
Well, this is – sorry to interrupt, but this is coming from, like, two West, SEC West guys. I don't think that there is any team in the West that can wait for Texas A&M to explode as any team in the West. Like, it is the funniest thing, man. LSU and Alabama could just – they're just like – they hate some Texas A&M. They hate them. Like, Mississippi State and Ole Miss became like the new favorite children compared to Texas A&M whenever they've come in the league and done what they did the last 2 years. So whenever they actually do go down that road, it's going to be fun to watch the rest of the SEC West just ride that train, buddy. But anyway, that's just a random topic.
No, I agree. It's wake-up call number one for Texas A&M.
Well, I mean, I think it's a very tough – I mean, you're talking about probably the furthest, maybe the longest, trip that anybody can actually make in the SEC.
They're Gainesville.
Gainesville to Missouri may be longer, I don't know. But South Carolina – I think it's just going to be in their place on a Thursday night. You're starting Kenny Hill, I guess, for Texas A&M, that young defense. I just think it's going to be too much. I think South Carolina's going to run away with that, and I think it's going to be a 31 to maybe 17 ball game where they kind of struggle here and there, but I think they kind of run away with it.
So it could
be a 45 to 31 game. It could be an Ole Miss Vanderbilt from last year, you know. So, who knows?
I don't think it's going to be that close.
Yeah, that was close. Yeah, you're right. Not close, but just the high scoring. You know, not a lot of defense trying to figure things out.
Because, I mean, that one Ole Miss had to go to the very end to win that game. They stole that one at Vanderbilt.
Yeah.
The next one I think we all can just bypass, that's East Carolina. That's a victory for the Dogs.
Pirates, man, they're tough.
For the Gamecocks.
Yeah.
They're tough.
There's no Chris Johnson running those sidelines anymore.
Who's coaching them now? Do we know?
Skip Holt still doing it?
I don't know. Is he?
I was thinking he was somewhere else.
Yeah, he went to South. No, he's not South Florida. Yeah. He did go to South Florida, but what's his name from Western Kentucky is there now.
Yeah, Taggart's there now.
Who is the coach at East Carolina?
I don't.
Who
know.
Cares? But
yeah, it's, I don't care.
It's a lost question. Well, yeah, but they were exciting when Skip was there, though. I mean, that was a team that, if you look at that lower tier of teams, they could come in and beat you if you weren't on your A game against them. But you're right, that's not the way they are anymore. But then, you know, week three, like we mentioned, Georgia's coming off of a bye, traveling up to South Carolina. Britton, what do you think?
So I am I'm a believer in Georgia a little bit more than South Carolina this year. The only thing is, this game is in South Carolina, and even though I do believe in Georgia a little bit more, it's only by the hair of my chinny chin chin. So I'm going with South Carolina here because it is a home game for South Carolina. Also, if you look at the rest of that schedule, it's not a great SEC schedule that week, so this is going to be kind of the big hyped-up game. South Carolina is going to be ready to go. I think South Carolina probably winds up with more losses at the end of the season because of the way the schedule falls for them as it compares to Georgia. So in that way, it's going to be similar to the last few years, and that the winner of this game seems like they're kind of in the driver's seat for the East, but then it doesn't really turn out that way. However, I think South Carolina does at least win this game.
Blair.
By the way, East Carolina's head coach is Ruffin McNeil.
I don't even know who that is.
What a great name, though.
I know. Ruffin McNeil, wasn't he like a big power player like in the 70s? And
I think he was the D coordinator under Leach at Texas Tech, if I remember correctly.
Okay.
That's where you know him from. But.
I'm going to actually take South Carolina in this, and I really don't feel confident in it, but the thing that leads me is the home game. Even though you're really, if you look at Georgia and South Carolina, they've kind of had success on each other's home field the last couple of years. But I do think early in the season, I think playing that second game, like we were talking about earlier, and the week off, I think there's a little bit of fine tuning that can actually happen playing two games at home leading up to it. I'm going to go with South Carolina, but I'm talking, you know, great game. It's going to be one of those, you know, probably last 5 minute ball games.
Yeah, I'm going to, I mean, if you haven't been able to tell, I'm a little higher on Georgia this year than I am South Carolina. I'm going to give Georgia the win. I think Mason is not a question mark for Georgia. I think Gurley and that offensive line is going to be able to get power against South Carolina's defensive line. Georgia's defensive line is going to be a little stronger than we know they're going to be stronger than South Carolina's. For that reason, they're going to do a better job holding that running game on South Carolina down just a little bit. It's not going to be impossible to stop, but I'm giving this edge to Georgia, even if it's at South Carolina. Next week, they are going to go to Vanderbilt. Again, lots of question marks with Vanderbilt. Lots of depth, lots of talent that's there, but a lot of it's still unproven. They're switching to the 3-4. We talked about that early in the podcast. Derek Mason, first-year head coach at Vanderbilt here in West End. I don't see them coming away with the victory. I think they're going to be another team that's going to be, you know, happy to get to that 6-win plateau. And this is not where Vanderbilt's going to find a win.
Yeah, I feel the same. Go ahead, Blair.
No, I was going to say the same thing. I mean, this is actually the game that Mark's brother and all the guys from South Carolina are coming into Nashville. I've been on several of those trips, and the Gamecocks have never lost. So I'm never going to choose against that. There's 3 days worth of drinking, and it's going to be a good time. And I'm hoping to hopefully catch them one night and have a good time. But, yeah, Vanderbilt's in trouble on that one.
Yeah, I feel the same way as y'all. I think Vanderbilt is going to struggle to reach bowl eligibility this year. They're going to be a little more traditional in the sense that they're looking for two SEC wins against some of the lesser programs on the schedule. South Carolina is not one of those lesser programs, and I think that they probably handle them fairly easily.
Why don't you stay with it, Britton, and tell us about Missouri.
Okay. So, yeah, Missouri is another one that I feel like there's a lot of question marks about. We've talked a lot about how we don't really know what to expect from Florida. I feel kind of the same way about Missouri, except I lean more towards regression towards the mean. They are not as good as they looked last year, I don't think, as just in terms of an overall program. But they're certainly nowhere near as bad as they looked in the first year in the SEC. I think it kind of evens out for them this year, and they're around an 8-win type of team as long as they don't have any devastating injuries. And I think this could be a very interesting game and could go down to the wire, but I just think South Carolina has more talent overall. Missouri has not recruited the way that the elite teams in the SEC have, and I think South Carolina exposes that and wins by around 10.
Yeah, I mean, you look at Missouri, what they were able to do with Franklin. Mock stepped in handedly, so you know, I don't think you're going to have a lot of issues at quarterback. I think you are going to miss DGB in the receiving core there at Missouri. I think you're right about some of the questions they have. I do think there's going to be some coming back to normalcy. I don't know if they'll get to 8. I think 7's a definite number for them. But this is another game that I just don't see even going to Columbia. What is this called? The Battle of Governors or something like that? I don't know. They're both in Columbia. But, you know, this rivalry.
Yeah, that's right.
The rivalry game that's been made up. I think South Carolina's going to take this one.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. It's a long trip. Yeah, nothing much else to add. You can take care of that.
Kentucky, South Carolina's got to win. How many times have I said that when I talk about Kentucky? That's just, you know, basketball. Did you know that Kentucky Wildcats were on the SEC Network the first weekend?
Always changes it to basketball talk when we start talking about Kentucky game.
Oh, it's going to be.
How are you going to do that during the Kentucky podcast?
I can find a way. Coach Callum, you know, Stoops are great friends.
I will tell you this, that this is the game, when I take a look at their schedule, that if they actually have one of those games where they just come out flat, this is the game. Well, they got a bye week. Kentucky's going to be better. Defensively, they've got some players on the defensive line. But I think Stoops, I mean, I think they're going to be better.
No, you're right.
South Carolina doesn't – if they don't – I'm going to pick them to lose. I mean, I'm going to pick them to win. But this is a game that would scare me leading up to a bye week where you got Furman after the bye week.
No, you're right. I mean, if you look at Kentucky, there's always one or two games on that schedule every year where Kentucky plays them really, really close. They do that against Georgia all the time. They've done that against South Carolina. They've done it to Florida and just couldn't pull it off. They've done it against LSU. I mean, this is a very long list over the last 10 years or so where Kentucky has been able to go in and play a program very, very tough, but still come away with the loss. You're right, Kentucky is going to be – it's all not doom and gloom. The schedule might not show that it's much better, but it is a much better program than it was last year. You got a lot more depth, a lot more experience, and a lot more talent, which is something you've not been able to say at Kentucky, is you're getting talent to play at Kentucky. So things are definitely on the rise, and you're right. This could be one of those, you know, South Carolina's looking ahead because they get the coast. It's Kentucky, it's Furman, then they got Auburn. So
you've seen Furrier, they've had this type of game pretty much every year. They had it last year at Tennessee.
Exactly what you I was going to ready to say.
So they had this game, you know, they had it at Vanderbilt a couple of years ago where, you know, they just kind of wandered through the game, ended up winning, but it was just like, you know, pulling teeth. If they do that, I think this is the game where I would see them kind of just waltzing in and maybe getting down early and having to really fight and claw to win the thing. I think it's going to be a closer ball game than what people think.
No, I agree it might be close. And for the reason that South Carolina was the recipient last year at Tennessee, I don't see them coming in that flat against a program like Kentucky or Tennessee 2 years in a row. We already talked about how Tennessee is going to surprise nobody this year because they're going to be ready for it. Well, I think South Carolina is going to be ready for everybody so that they don't get surprised. Britton, you got anything you want to add to that?
No, that makes sense to me, everything that you said. So I still think it's a win, but maybe Kentucky gives them a year.
And I can't believe we talked that long about Kentucky playing South Carolina. Furman.
Well, I mean, when you look at the schedule, Shane, I mean, you're always trying to find this pickup game. And when I look at the schedule, I keep coming back to at Kentucky. So
that's the only one. I mean, because you know as well as I know, they're not going to hiccup against Tennessee again.
No.
You know, they're not going to. So you look at it, that's a game that they should win, that they could lose. It's there. Furman's not going to be that one. And then they go to they get to go to the Plains and play at Auburn. Blair, what do you think there?
I'm going to go ahead and take that as a loss, just because really I think Auburn can stop South Carolina more than South Carolina can stop Auburn, and it's in Alabama. So I think that's the one where it's the glaring loss on their schedule that I see, outside of possibly Georgia.
Britton?
I got this one as a loss for South Carolina as well. I think Auburn, so much veteran leadership coming back, tons of talent, at least the starting positions across the board. They could have issues in terms of depth if they have some key injuries. But I just think they're a better team from top to bottom than South Carolina. And with it being on the in the Plains, at the Plains, whatever, they hand South Carolina their first loss of the season here.
This is becoming a boring podcast all of a sudden. No, I agree. South Carolina can be erratic at times, and late in the season, you never know what you could get with a South Carolina program. I don't think that's the case with Auburn. When you look at Auburn and the way that team gets coached, we've talked about this before. If you want to play Auburn and win, it's earlier in the season. It's not later. And so, you know, you're talking about getting them late October. They're going to be in late season form at this point. It's not a home game for South Carolina. It's not going to bode well. I think it's still going to be a great contest. It's going to be very entertaining. It could be even close, but Auburn's going to win that one as well. And we already talked about the Tennessee matchup. Tennessee is not going to surprise South Carolina 2 years in a row, even though it is at Neyland. I'm sorry, it's not. It's a home game. That's going to make it even worse for Tennessee. They're just going to get the snot knocked out of them.
Yeah, this to me is
and I want to watch like, that.
Yeah. This is like a junior version of the Georgia-Auburn and Alabama-Auburn games, in that these guys have this game circled, and they're going to be prepared because they feel sick to their stomach about whether they lost that. Because if South Carolina doesn't win this game last year, they're the ones going to the SEC championship. And they had no business losing this game. The only difference between the Georgia-Auburn and Alabama-Auburn matchup and this game is that Auburn is bringing really good talent back to the field in 2014. Tennessee is not. And I just think it's going to be a complete blowout.
Yeah, and you got one thing I forgot to mention is they're coming off of a loss. You know, so talk about wanting to seek revenge on somebody. Well, Tennessee's the recipient of that. Blair, anything you want to add?
Just a loss for Tennessee.
All right, tell us what they're going to do at Florida.
I think I've got this down as a win, and one of the things I have it down as a win is because they've got a off week leading into it. So they got a bye week. And I just don't buy into Florida, and the wheels could be completely off by then. So we'll actually see, but that's what I'm looking for.
So I've got this as their second loss of the season, and as much as I've said about not really believing in Florida or not even really knowing what to think about Florida, I think there's just enough youth and inexperience on the South Carolina team that can come in and can maybe blow it, maybe lose a game they're not really supposed to lose. They're probably favored coming into this, but a good Florida defense makes the difference. And it's at the Swamp. That's always a tough place to play. And so I think South Carolina winds up losing this, and it's probably a job saver for Muschamp, because I think that they end up somewhere around that 7-8 win mark, and this is sort of like the win that galvanizes the fan base, specifically because it's against Steve Spurrier and a superior South Carolina team.
Wow, that's bold. I'm not going to be that bold. I'm not high on Florida either. If you've heard me in the past talking about Florida, I'm not buying what they have, what they're selling. It is a tough place to play at the Swamp. I do agree with you there, but it's a loss at the end of the day for Florida. It's a win for South Carolina. And I only got them winning or losing two. So next is South Alabama. We can just bypass that. That's a win all the way around. At Clemson's where they're going to end their season, their regular season. Blair, you're going to be able to help me out with the statistics, but they don't lose to Clemson anymore, and I think that's going to just hold true again another year.
Yeah, I mean, they're 5-0 the last 5 years. This is the kicker. I don't want to give them 11-1, so I'm going to give them a loss on this one, because winning any rivalry 5 years in a row creates a desperation on one end and an entitlement kind of feeling on the other, that Clemson's not going to have the weapons that they had last year. They're going to be basically scheduled to lose this game, which leads me more to think that they may actually pull it up and actually have the game of their year. So I'm going to say 10-2 with a loss of Clemson, just because of their rivalry game.
All right, I got them 10-2 with a win there. Britton?
I think they win here as well. I don't think Clemson is as good as they have been the past couple of years, and as good as they were in the past couple of years, they couldn't beat South Carolina then. So I've got them 10-2 as well, but not making the trip to the East Championship, because Georgia's 11-1, even though they lost to South Carolina.
Yeah, I've got Georgia going to the in the East as well. Blair, what about? So
I got South Carolina.
You got South Carolina going to the East. Who do you have on the West? I don't know if we've asked you that.
I'm going to stay with Alabama. I don't know why.
That was my West. I have Alabama winning in the West, playing Georgia in the SEC championship, and Georgia finally being able to go have the opportunity to play for a national championship with one loss. And Alabama might come in with two losses. That's just my thoughts. Anything else you want to add on this about the South Carolina podcast before we wrap things up?
Go Hawks.
All right. Well, that's going to put another SEC preview into the books. Three more teams left and 4 days till the kickoff starts. We're going to do our Tennessee podcast tomorrow. Drew has promised us he will be here for that, Blair. So we're going to record that tomorrow, same time as we have been. So hopefully get you there. We'll love to hear Drew's take on the way we think how bad Tennessee is going to be. So with that, we're going to call this podcast done.